You're listening to
Sci-Fi Dig. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Sci-Fi Dig Show 325. I'm your host, Aaron Makem. This week, I'm going to talk to you about Fringe, as always. I'm doing a pretty good job of burning right through these. Well, you know, burning as far as posting on a weekly basis, but you know, a lot of work goes into the shows, and I got to say, I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying going back, not only for, you know, doing the show, but I am learning so much more than I thought possible and being able to nitpick over little things that I see here and there. But, man, I'm really enjoying doing that. And this week's episode is Bound, and I'm going to get to that momentarily. A couple of things I want to talk about real quick. Of course, we're going to do new DVD releases as well as a little bit of news. I couldn't find much news that I really wanted to talk about. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff around the upcoming Star Wars film. And the reason I didn't want to get too deep into it is because this changes on a daily basis. And since, you know, by the time this show posts or somebody listens to this show, it could change again. I'm just going to be brief about it. You know, Carrie Fisher said she was going to be in the next Star Wars, and now they're saying they don't know if she's going to be in there, that she was just joking around. And so, you know, the everybody's wondering if, in fact, she is going to be in it, and she was supposed to keep quiet about it. And so we'll see where all of that that goes. Any way you look at it, you know, I would like the next Star Wars film to be a continuation of what we've had from the original trilogy. That's what I would enjoy seeing where they're at now, introducing maybe their children, or somebody else, you know, in the Jedi Order, through that interaction, and then being able to follow that person. So much you're going to be able to do with this universe. And, you know, what kills me is that all of us, as, you know, science fiction geeks, we all know that because we've read the novels, we've read the comics, we realize how much good material is out there. There was just so much, like even the Dark Horse universe, you know, aside from the Marvel run, but the Dark Horse run, I mean, so much good stuff. I mean, I have dozens of comics here that I haven't even read yet of the Star Wars universe. And I see that, not only are the papal, I don't know what papal is, but it sounds really cool. But the paper omnibus, I don't know. Well, not only are those usually on sale from time to time on Amazon, but there's usually digital versions on Comixology as well. And, you know, it's an opportunity for you to get caught up if you're not sure what's going on. And with all the different variations, you know, we have the continuation, we have, we have the story of Luke Skywalker's great-great-grandson or great-grandson. We have before the Skywalkers came on the scene, we have, you know, the Knights of the Old Republic. We had just a lot of different Star Wars out there floating around that really makes the universe. I honestly believe that if it wasn't for all of this extracurricular stuff out there, that we would not have the fan base that we have. Because there's just so much good stuff and so much to really spark the imagination and show you what a full, robust world this is, that I think that we're doing it a disservice by not taking in some of these things. Just a lot of really good things out there. And like I say, I know with Sci-Fi Dig, if 30% of you are comics readers, I'd be surprised. And that's why I'm trying to get some people more excited about comics. All right. And speaking of comics, we have, you know, the controversy continues, you know, as those of you, and I'm not going to debate this, I'm not going to get into this too deeply, but Orson Scott Card, you know, if you're a science fiction geek, you know, he's all about Ender's Game, right? I mean, that's what he's tied to. He, you know, was going to draw, or is actually, he's already been paid, as far as I understand, it's already done, the digital series Adventures of Superman. And what happened was that he's been kind of vocal about gay marriage and the fact that he does not agree with that. Now, all I have read about him, because I just don't care, okay? I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't care to get involved in it. I don't care to go into a page and try to read all the comments. I just don't care. You know, this guy did Ender's Game, who for the first time in my life, I'm like four books in, and I just started it, you know, last year. So, I mean, I know it's been around. I know that I read one of the novels from that series. I just don't know which one. It wasn't Ender's Game, though. It was one of the other ones when I was younger and didn't realize, you know, how big this thing was. People say that he's anti-gay across the board. All I know is what I have read of him has been against gay marriage. And it's not that he's against gay marriage when you read the comments. It was more along the lines of that he thinks that regular marriage, you know, traditional marriage should remain intact. And by allowing same-sex couples to do that, that causes a problem. And again, I'm not debating this, and I could be off the board. I'm just telling you what I read. So I don't need 10,000 emails telling me, you know, how wrong I am, because I just don't care. I'm just trying to give everybody that's not, like I said, not a big comic reading audience here, but Orson Scott Card definitely falls into our camp. But, you know, he's been very prolific. The dog has decided to join me downstairs. See, I have a dog who never comes downstairs because she doesn't like it down here. But this dog, no, the new dog, she's into everything down here. I don't know what, and she just wanders around in circles. But the fun thing is there's a drum set sitting right by me, and if I yell in the drum set, it scares the crap out of her because it just echoes. Anyway, see how easily I rat hole myself? Anyhow, you know, what I've read is he's for the sanctity of traditional marriage. And so, you know, considering that Hollywood and the comics industry is rather liberal, they're not down with that. And we had a DC artist quit who was on the book, Chris Sprouse. And I like his statement because he stays away from any kind of controversy as far as, you know, the anti-gay statements that Card has made. He says, "It took a lot of thought to come to this conclusion, but I've decided to step back as artist on this story. The media surrounding this story reached a point where it took away from the actual work, and that's something I wasn't comfortable with. My relationship with DC Comics remains as strong as ever, and I look forward to my next project with them." Now, you can take that how you want it, but I can say that, you know, reading the statement and trying to look at things from his point of view, it's true. It does take away from the work. Even if he already did the work and he was paid for it, he didn't want that to be part of it. I can understand, and it has nothing to do with the anti-gay statements. And I think it has to do with, you know, what he's saying. There's so much media surrounding this work that, no matter what he does, I think he's going to get kind of screwed. Because here's the thing, even if it's the best work he has ever done, in 10 years from now, he does a story and it's a great, he does some great artwork and it's a big thing, and he does an interview. They're going to say, "So, you know, what happened with, how'd you like working with Orson Scott Card?" I can guarantee you that's going to come up. And so I think that it's probably a wise move on his part. But that's me saying that without garnering my income from doing this, you know? And so I kind of feel bad for the guy because, you know, he's just trying to do his job. And how is he supposed to do that? You know, it would be like if you or I went to our, I have a regular job. Some people don't. If you went to your regular job where you had to go to a building and do your work and you had to work with somebody who was a bigot or work with somebody who had, I hate to use the word political agenda because I don't really think it is political, but, you know, had some sort of agenda that was just so against everything you believed in, and finally you were just like, you know what, I can't work with this person, you had to quit your job. Try to look at it that point of view, and that's kind of terrifying because you have a family to feed and, you need to pay your bills and pay your rent and, you know, things like that. And I think that would be a really tough thing. And I got to say that it took a lot of guts for him to do this. I wonder how long he worked on the statement because it comes off, you know, people understand where he's coming from, at least I do. And so, you know, hey, good for him for standing up for what he believes in. Good for him for having the ability at this point in his life to be able to do just that. You know, I think it would be tough for some people to be able to do that. But the fact that he was able to, both financially and otherwise, I think that's a very bold move on his part. Anyway, let's talk about some new DVD releases. We actually have, this upcoming week is going to be a good week for, I think, all of us. Now, a lot of these are reissues, but still, nonetheless, good week. We're going to get Life of Pi. And we're going to get that and, you know, the 17 variations. Please stop selling 3D Blu-rays. Nobody wants them. Just stop selling them. But we're going to get the 3D, the Blu-ray, the DVD, you know, the whole deal. Rise of the Guardians is going to be available. The Blu-ray release of Willow is going to be available. Roger Rabbit 25th anniversary is going to be available. Let's see, I haven't seen Roger Rabbit from beginning to end since I bought the VHS. It was on TV the other night. I watched a little bit of it, but I wouldn't mind checking out a pristine Blu-ray. Just a great movie all around. The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the Disney one, is going to be available. Mulan and Mulan 2 is going to be available in a Blu-ray pack. The Blob, the original one, is going to be released on Blu-ray. I bet you that's going to look damn good. Love that movie. Just love that movie. Just like one of the first type of films that, you know, was, you know, I think a precursor to the films where it's kind of like us against them, where you're kind of cut off and you have to make do with what you have around you, you know. And of course, then we went to, we had Night of the Living Dead, and we had the Body Snatchers films. All that, I think, kind of falls in the same wheelhouse, and I really enjoy those kind of films. We're going to get the Alfred Hitchcock, the Classic Collection, and you're going to have a DVD and a Blu-ray version. I'm not exactly sure what's going on here, but the DVD version is going to be $13.95 and the Blu-ray is going to be $53.99. So I'm not sure why there's just a huge, huge discrepancy here. But some of these movies are not well known, but it's nice for the completist and to be able to see some of Hitchcock's stuff that you don't get to see a whole lot. We have Blackmail, The Lady Vanishes, Rich and Strange, Sabotage, Secret Agent, The 39 Steps, Number 17, The Man Who Knew Too Much, and The Lodger. And unfortunately, they're saying here that there's no subtitles of any kind. I know some people don't like subtitles, but I watch everything with subtitles. Batman, Mystery of the Batwoman is going to get a Blu-ray release. And of course, the Blu-ray is going to be about $13. You can buy the DVD version for about $9 for those of us that haven't seen it yet. The miniseries, The Kingdom, is going to get a... this does not look like it is a Blu-ray release. It's just a regular DVD release. And I thought this was already available. I mean, it's in my Netflix queue, so I don't think that I ever watched this, The Tenth Kingdom, but I will be... it's in my queue with one of the million other movies that I have that I don't have time to watch. If you live in the UK, you're going to get every freaking variation of the Twilight Saga that you would like. You know, you have Breaking Dawn Part 2, the regular and the Blu-ray. We have the two-disc limited edition. We have the complete collection. We have the complete collection on Blu-ray. So if you want to watch this stuff, this crap, this dribble, then it's there for you. Gotta say, I know that the Twilight books were good. Everybody tells me, all the people that read them say they are so fantastic, the movies are so horrible in comparison. The movies are horrible in comparison to a commercial on golf, okay? They are just mind-numbingly dull in so many ways. And you have to watch all of them till you get to the last one where there's actually a decent fight scene. And I finally get to see somebody rip somebody's head off, which made me just gleeful in the theater. It was just ridiculous. But when you have a daughter, you got to go see these movies. Okay, you're going to get Doctor Who this week, and it's about time. It's been a couple weeks since you got a release, Doctor Who, the Aztec Special Edition, and this is a William Hartnell Doctor Who, so you're going to be getting that. You're going to get The Master on Blu-ray and regular DVD. Utopia is going to be available. Okay, folks living in the UK or who use Amazon UK, I cannot recommend Utopia enough, okay? Out of 5 digger shovels, it gets 10. Okay, I love this show. I absolutely love this music. Those of you that are watching this for the first time, what I want you to do is after you watch the very first episode, okay, or the second episode, or the third episode, I want you to rewind right between the final scene and the credits and listen to the way the music works. Because, man, they do a great job, and I need to pull some audio to play that just to show you how good the music is. I love this series. I finally finished it. I loved it. As soon as it's available in the States, I will be buying this because this is something that I know I will go back and watch again. I hope that we get a series 2 because I like it so much, but if we don't, I'm okay with the way that it ended. But definitely you could do a series 2 on the ending, but I am okay with the way it ended. I mean, some people like everything tied up in a nice, neat little bow, But, you know, for me, it's not necessarily a cliffhanger, but, you know, for the story that they told, that was the end, and it works quite well. I cannot recommend this enough. And also, not a series that you can be like, okay, I'm going to pop this in, and then I'm going to start playing on my iPad. Okay, this is like Fringe. You've got to pay attention to what's going on. You got to pay attention to the characters. Just so well done, and so many standout acting roles. Well, I shouldn't say so many, but there are three or four that are really absolutely on top, and I just fantastic. And if you love, if you like Fringe, you're going to love Utopia. You have that same kind of science aspect, and you have that political intrigue, and it's just a great, great show. I cannot recommend this enough. I had no idea it was coming out this week until I looked before I started recording the show, and I just got all giddy. It's going to be £14 on DVD. And this it will drop on March 11th. I hope that the U.S. gets a version here pretty quick, or they show it on BBC America, because I will watch it again on there. The Tall Man, which is came out here several months ago, stars Jessica Biel. A lot of people did not like this movie. I rather enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Oh, look, for some reason, Utopia is, if you scroll down further, there is the Blu-ray version for £17.50. You're also going to get Willow as well. You're going to get Ray Harryhausen, Special Effects Titan. I don't even know if this is available in the U.S. I know that there's a Ray Harryhausen kind of documentary, but I need to check this out because I loved his stuff when I was a kid. You guys might be getting some better stuff over there. A little mad about that, but whatever. And that seems to be about all that I see here as far as science fiction is concerned. You're also going to get the Ray Harryhausen Special Effects Titan on DVD, although the Blu-ray cover is way better than the DVD cover. They're two completely different covers. That's kind of weird. But anyway, so that's what you have coming up. I don't see anything else sci-fi-ish that jumps out and grabs me. But I think DVD is all around for everybody. There's all kind of great stuff coming out, and it's been a couple of weeks since we've had some nice things that fall into the genre of what this show's about. Anyway, with that being said, I'm going to play my Fringe breakdown. Then I have a couple of quick comic reviews, and I'm going to wind up the show. So, the Fringe, this is season 1, episode 11, and it's going to be about an hour. So, if you don't like Fringe, skip forward an hour. I don't know why you wouldn't like it, though. I mean, that's just crazy talk. This week's episode is entitled Bound. This is episode 11 from season 1. It originally aired on January 20th, 2009. You know, I look at these dates as I'm doing these, and man, it just seems just like yesterday that I was watching these. And, you know, overall, everything kind of syncs up. Sometimes the technology in a show, like cell phone technology in particular, is kind of, I'll catch it out of the corner of my eye. You know, that, you know, they're using something a little older. You know, flip phones and things like that don't really bother me because, I mean, I still see people using those all the time. I have people that swear by flip phones. I mean, they don't text or anything. You just use them to talk on. But every now and then we'll get like a shot of Olivia's phone and she's using like an older phone, you know, with a smaller screen. Might not even be in color. It's kind of funny when you watching these shows and the technology is really what dates it. But if it wasn't for that, you could be just like you were just airing today, you know. Anyway, the first clip that I have is, I'm just going to play the clip.
Walter, what are you doing?
I'm dosing a caterpillar.
Dosing? As in LSD?
Well, it's a special blend.
I see. Hey, guess what just happened? Finding out that my father's giving drugs to bugs somehow just became a typical moment in my life.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Hey, have you heard from Olivia this morning?
No, why? What's up?
She's missing.
And if you remember last episode, Olivia got kidnapped at the end. And I have a couple clips here. I'm going to run them together. And it's of Broyles taking charge because one of his own is missing. And then the second clip is going to be our old friend, that, well, Sanford Harris, I'm trying to figure out exactly when, if we saw him once before or what. But anyway, that is the man that Olivia went after for raping those two, allegedly raping those two girls, or I think the two girls, there was two of them. And of course, you know, her and him are not going to be buddies because, you know, basically he thinks that she tried to ruin his career or whatever. But him and Broyles were friends. Remember in the beginning, Broyles didn't like Olivia because of that. And so, you know, and Broyles is in the middle of this, right? He's trying to find her, trying to figure out what happened to her. And he gets a call from Harris. So I'm going to run those two clips together. They're kind of self-explanatory.
Listen up. One of our own has been abducted. The vehicle of Agent Olivia Dunham was found abandoned on Graniteville Road in Westford, 3 miles northeast of Little Hill. I want everyone doing everything. Surveillance cameras checked. Local officers and agents questioned. Anyone who might have seen anything. PD, DWP, AAA, I don't care what acronym it is. You get them, you talk to them, and you find Dunham. For those of you new to this office, this is Agent Charlie Francis. He's my second in command. You got anything, you come to me or him. Agents from Albany, Mr. Clark, and get him to Boston. Or do I need to remind you how I started this conversation?
I have a Sanford Harris, line 6.
Just get it done. Sedgwick, listen, we're having something of a crisis here.
Yeah, well, your crisis is why I'm calling.
Look, Philip, we go back too far. I say something diplomatic, you'll see through it before the end of my sentence.
You're calling about Olivia Dunham?
I'm calling about Fringe Division.
Internal Affairs is sending me in to do a full review of your office, make sure things are running as they should.
I just wanted you to hear it from me.
Okay, that beating music in the background, that's like the first 15 minutes of this episode, I swear. It gets you so tensed up, and I didn't really notice it until I'm listening to the audio clips. And this whole episode makes me tense. One of my favorite episodes. I have a lot of issues with it, but it's one of my favorite episodes. Anyway, I need to, first of all, we need to know that Sanford Harris is the man that Olivia went after. He was accused of raping those girls and was a friend of Broyles, and that's why he's calling Broyles to give him the heads up. Sanford Harris is going to be a giant thorn in Olivia's side here pretty soon, and he's kind of a dick, okay? That's what it boils down to. He's just a dick. And so I'm sorry for anybody out there that offends, but I'm going to be using the term dick to describe him for several episodes, I'm sure. And probably multiple times in this episode. So, children, if you don't like the word dick, or your parents don't want you to hear dick, then I don't think it gets me an explicit tag. I think the dick is better than douche, right? So I'm going to go with dick. Anyway, so she is in, she's being held in some sort of building. And the guy, Loeb, is there. He's wearing a mask. We don't know it's him until he takes the mask off. And she's awake. She's on a gurney type thing that can rotate. So they rotate her upside down. They inject something in her back. She screams bloody murder because obviously it hurts. Rotate her back, and she said, and Loeb leaves. There's two guys in there that don't have masks on, so she can clearly identify them, right? And when you get to the end of the episode, you realize that there are some issues I have that even raises more issues with the way she's treated right now. She says, I'm just going to tell you at the end of the episode. The way that it plays out, it's as though they never intended to kill her. But clearly, something was going to happen bad because she can identify these two guys. They don't have masks on. So they wouldn't let her free, right? Unless they were going to try to convince her to be on their team, you know? So anyway, she asks for a glass of water. She's like, if you're going to kill me, give me a glass of water. So he gives her a glass beaker of water because they're in a laboratory, right? And she's like, I can't drink with one hand. So the guy, because bad guys are stupid, unties her hand. And she takes the beaker and she smashes the guy in the head. She reaches over and undoes the other arm. And miraculously, her legs are free because they weren't before because she was just upside down. I have an issue with that. I can't figure out how that all happened. But anyway, then the great stuff kicks in. She starts kicking everybody's ass. You know, she just beats the crap out of some guy. She runs into a front office where there's a guy that's supposed to be monitoring something. Takes him out, grabs a weapon, grabs a set of car keys, and grabs some of the vials of something sitting there, empties out the thermos, throws the vials in the thermos, caps it, runs out into the street, keeps hitting the key fob until she finds the car it belongs to, jumps in the car, calls Broyles, I'm going to play that clip in a second, tells him what's what, And she gets further away, stops at a construction site where there's a big mound of dirt, takes her hands, digs into the dirt or the sand, buries the thermos, and then has a little bit of a breakdown because, I mean, she was captured, and I can't say she was tortured, but Galloway knows what they injected in her, right? So keep in mind that the escape scene is great because all her agent training kicks in. The first part of how she actually got loose is kind of dumb and doesn't, and it still bothers me to this day that like why were the bad guys so dumb? And anyway, so Loeb has already left and he's going back to the office. And the next clip is of Olivia when she calls Broyles to let him know that that she is no longer being held.
Agent Dunham, I need to speak to Broyles.
The hell happened to you?
I'm in Watertown. There's a building that we need to raid. I need agents. Maybe 20. Have them meet me in 30 minutes at the end of Talcott Street.
Are you okay?
Not yet, I'm not.
Now, Dunham has been having a very bad day thus far, right? Bad evening, bad day. Things are going to look up, right? No, they're not going to look up. This is one of those episodes where the whole time, the injustice of it all, just get under my skin. I was just so angry. Like, the first three quarters of the episode, I'm just so pissed at everybody. And so she's done her thing, and she's waiting for the agents to show up, right? So she's sitting there, and the agents roll in, right? And she's like, all right, man, Calvary's here. Help us here, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it doesn't work out that way.
The building I was being held at is 2 miles
Hands behind
from
your
here.
Head and drop to the floor.
Where's Broyles?
Do it!
What's going on here?
Freeze, right there!
Just not having a good day at all. So the agents get out, and they trank her, okay? So let's get this right. She was trying to solve a case last night. And was able to figure out where it was going down, where that she found the Little Hill Airfield. She's headed there. Some dudes run her off the road. Kidnap her, manhandle her, strap her to a gurney, jab some stuff and inject her in the back. Don't know what's going on. Single-handedly, she escapes, kicks ass, calls Broyles, says what's what, you know, is she wants to go raid this building. Help comes, and they take her out instead of going and doing what they're supposed to do. So, needless to say, she's just not having a good day. My favorite part of that whole scene is when she yells, what's going on here? I probably watched that part about 30 times. I mean, the look on her face, and the way she portrays the character, the way she portrays all the emotion of betrayal and confusion and anger is just fantastic. I absolutely love it. And her voice changes a little bit there. I just love that scene. Fantastic scene. Just that one little bit where she's like, what's going on here? I love it. I'm just talking about it now. I'm getting excited about it all over again. Anyway, Olivia finds herself waking up in a hospital, handcuffed to the bed. And who is there but Dick? Dick. And Sanford Harris, he's a dick. I don't know if I mentioned that. I do not like him at all. And that's what's weird is that's going to change a little bit here in this episode because I have something to point out. But anyway, this next clip is about 3.5 minutes. But this is just kind of the whole history of the two laid out in front of her. And she's in a situation now where she did what was right. But he's still a little angry about it, and so he's going to make her life a living hell because he's a dick.
Quite a day, Agent Dunham. Oh, you're in Boston Hospital. You probably didn't think you'd see me again so soon.
Don't take this the wrong way, Mr. Harris, but I don't think about you all too often.
Really? Well, you must get some satisfaction from what you did to me. My conviction wasn't a point of pride for you.
Why am I cuffed to the bed?
Because this is the kind of authority that I have here. You see, my conviction on sexual assaults that you so ably prosecuted is overturned. And Homeland Security, for whom I consult, has assigned me to review Fringe Division.
Just like that.
Which gives me the prerogative to question your sanity.
your loyalty, your worthiness to serve. And it seems to me the people you surround yourself with have failed those tests at every turn. Beginning with your former partner and lover, John Scott. An agent who betrayed you. Turned out to be a traitor against this country. A traitor whose life you went to considerable lengths to save.
If you're suggesting that I knew anything about...
You went to Iraq to recruit a man to help you save Agent Scott's life. Peter Bishop. Arrested 7 times.
I need it, Peter.
To assist you in freeing his father from a mental institution. Walter Bishop. He was sent to St. Clair's because he was deemed unfit to stand trial for manslaughter. A man who spent most of his adult years running questionable scientific experiments on human subjects. He's out of his mind, Ms. Dunham. These are the people you surround yourself with. A traitor, a criminal, and a lunatic. What does that say about you?
Am I under arrest?
Goes without saying that you are not to investigate your own abduction. It's understood?
So that's what that's all about, you know? I do love the music in the background there. You know, as I do when I do television shows, you know, I'm not a big soundtrack kind of guy. I mean, I like collecting some soundtracks, listening to some soundtracks from different shows at times. But I know some people get like the soundtrack to everything. I like soundtracks that have words personally. I mean, I enjoy the music well enough. The only exception to this rule is anything that Barry McCreary does. He did all the sound for Battlestar Galactica, all the music for that. And I just love that music. And I know, I mean, you know, which doesn't really make me different than anybody else, right? Everybody has their music they love. But I have to say that in Fringe, what I like about the music is, man, it really adds to the scene. I'm not sure how it stands alone, and I may get a soundtrack here, and I'm having some trouble tracking down some of them. I may get a soundtrack in the future to listen to the whole thing, but the background music that they use works so well, and they're kind of all over the map with the instruments they use. I really enjoy it. You know what? I don't know enough about the sound to give anybody credit for it, and I apologize for that. But man, it's so good. And the sound overall in the series, not just the music, but the sound, the mixing, the voices, all the audio, is just so well done in the series. I think Fringe, as far as like all audio quality is concerned, I think Fringe is probably the best show I have ever heard. Okay, it just everything just sounds so good. You know, from a conversation to the action. Everything is mixed real well, works real well together. I know I've said that before, but I'm always amazed at just how crystal clear everything is. And when you're watching it, how the sound kind of makes sense. And of course, I watch everything with captions on because I just started doing that when my daughter was born, and it kind of stuck with me. And so I want to make sure I get all the dialogue as well. But anyway, the sound really does, they do a really good job with the sound here, making it all work together. Now, the next clip is Olivia showing up at the office, and her and Charlie have a conversation, and then she's going to meet her. Then her sister shows up, and she has to turn off turn on the happy face, you know, in order to greet them.
Liv. You okay?
Yep.
Hey, Liv. You know I had nothing to do with the way you were taken in, right?
Yeah, I know that. That son of a bitch, Harris. He molested 3 women. I put him away, and that's what this is about. I am not going to ask him for a thing. I'm going to go to that building myself.
Now, we sent a team to the address, to the building where you were being held. It was empty. There was nothing there.
What about the phone I got? The car I took? Did you trace
them? Clean. The only prints were yours. Oh, there's something else. There's a woman here to see you, Rachel. Says that you're expecting her. Who is she?
She's my sister.
Hey!
Oh, you look great.
I don't really.
Come on, you.
I don't. Oh,
you're always so hard
on
yourself.
I know, whatever.
You
thank
really
you.
Good. You are just a giant person.
Hey, Olivia.
Hello. When did you get so big?
What happened to your face?
Oh, it's,
I bought this for you.
She wanted to bring you something from her room.
I have really, really needed one of these. Thank you so much.
Are you sure you're all right?
It's a long story. I'm working on a case, so...
Go, we're good. Is it okay if we still stay with you tonight? Because if it's not okay.
No, of course. I'll meet you back here at 5.
Perfect. Go, save the world.
All right.
Okay, I love you.
I'll see you at 5.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you. Bye.
Now, there's a couple things I want to mention here. First of all, when Olivia was being held and they flipped her over, she noticed one of the guy's shoes. And, they made a big deal about it because they kind of focused in on it. So, you know, she kind of knows the guy's shoes, right? Secondly, her niece gives her a magic eight ball. And so she's very happy with that. And third thing I want to mention is that, you know what, for the life of me, I cannot remember what happens to her sister and her niece. I'm not sure where they go or what happens. But this first season, we tried to make it seem as though there was like normal family type thing going on. And as usually happens in a lot of these type of shows, it kind of falls away because the work becomes the center. And I think that everybody, I don't know, it's been my experience that I think writers start out trying to make a different type of show where there's family involved and we get to see them a little bit outside of the cases that we're part of. But I think that as the shows get more complex, there's just not enough time for that and it just becomes unimportant, the family aspect of it. I mean, right now I think it's part of setting up the character. You know, we learned a bit about Olivia's past and her stepfather, and we learned a bit about we've learned that she has family and things like that. And I'm not saying it's not unimportant because I think it we need it to help us develop the character of Olivia Dunham. But I'm going to say that they just kind of fall away. And somebody the other day asked me, because they're watching Fringe as well, and they're a little bit further ahead of me now because they're into season 3, and I think I'm only halfway through season 2. I'm just kind of taking I don't want to get too far ahead because then I can't remember very well. But they asked me what happens to her sister and niece, and I'm like, I have no idea. I just do not remember. And I'll get there and, you know, eventually, but it has been, you know, I mean, this has been several years ago since I've watched this show, and this is only my... Well, it'll be my third watch through because I second watch through on TV and then with the DVD sets and then I watch each episode in its entirety again when I'm pulling the audio for it. So I just do not remember what happened to them, but I will figure that out for everybody out there and maybe somebody out there already knows, but I just completely forgot. And so not to say that those characters are unimportant, but whatever way they did away with them, it worked because I don't remember them. Until I watched season 1, I forgot that they were even part of the episodes. Anyway, the next clip is Olivia goes to the lab and she gets Walter and Peter to come and help her. And keep in mind that she has buried those vials. And the entire warehouse was empty. Like Troy said, there was nothing there. Everything was cleaned out, all gone, no evidence, nothing, not a zero zip zilch. And so she is... going to go back there and they're loading up the equipment in the car and she has this conversation with Walter.
They gave me a spinal tap. They put electrodes or sensors on my head. Why would they do that? I mean, what would they want with me? What were they doing? Who could they be?
You're like a question machine. And there was nothing there when they checked the building.
No. They cleared the building, but I took something before I left. Something from one of their labs, and I hid it to keep it safe.
What was it?
Well, Peter, that's what you're going to go find out, right? So they have a little mobile lab, and they go and investigate this stuff, and Walter is checking it all out. In the meantime, Dunham goes back to the office, and they have another case. This is some cool stuff they have going on here. We find out that it is some sort of virus, but the idea here, what I like, and we're going to get to the scene, but I just want to describe it for everybody who hasn't seen the episode in a while to remind you. You have a teacher teaching, and He takes a drink of water and he's to kind of clear his throat. And he, next thing you know, he's on the ground. He can't breathe. And this great big giant slug comes out of his mouth. It is so gross. And, of course, everybody freaks out and the whole the classroom empties because, well, there's a giant slug thing, you know, going all over the place. And so the Fringe team is called in to figure out what's what and what's going on here.
Agent Dunham, I know you've already had quite a day, but there's been an event that requires our attention.
Okay, where?
Internal hemorrhaging, rapid cell deterioration. It appears that he suffocated from within.
Well, maybe that's because a giant, slimy, spiky slug came out of his mouth.
Yes. And I have a theory as to what it might have been.
I'm sure you do. Care to share?
Eventually.
Peter, anything?
No, it always takes a second for the thermal cameras to calibrate. What do we know about our guy?
Only what I was told outside. His name's Miles Kinberg, immunologist, cutting-edge work, an expert in his field. That's all I know.
Well, whatever it was, it ripped through his esophagus on the way out. At least he died teaching a righteous profession.
Hold on a sec. I got it.
Stay there.
Right there. Right there. Right there.
Look. Simian hemorrhagic
under the
fever.
Chairs. Right there.
Infected cells have a definitive spiderweb look. Makes HIV look like a common cold by comparison.
Walter.
Ebola. First the headaches, then the skin turns to rice pudding.
Walter, please.
No time for the immune response.
I lost it.
What do you mean you lost it?
Either it can vanish or it's fast. It's really fast. There.
Cover the doors!
It's going down. There. Get it!
There! There!
Get it! Get it! Get it! Get it!
Things like this used to happen in the lab all the time. It makes me nostalgic.
Now, as funny as that scene sounds, you need to really watch it to appreciate the humor involved. They're trying to chase this giant slug thing around using like an infrared something or other to figure out where it's at, and it can move very quickly. And the whole time, Walter is looking at the slides on the screen that the professor was showing the students, and just, you know, talking about all the different viruses and everything. And ultimately, what ends up happening is as the slug is getting away, and Walter throws a trash can on top of it and is standing on it. And he's standing there victorious that he caught this thing. And the whole thing is just ridiculous. But a great Walter moment. Anyway, the next clip that I have is of Walter examining the slug, as it were. Before I go any further, though, I wanted to tell you that the glyphs spell out the word saved. Just Like Heaven by the Watson Twins is one of the songs from the episode. And The Observer. I spotted this one because usually it's the crowd scenes where you can find him. And if you have an episode that doesn't have a lot of crowd scenes, then that's when he's hard to spot. Like the last episode didn't have a lot of crowd scenes because he was on a monitor, so that was more difficult. But Olivia goes to Walter's lab, and you can see the Observer walking in front. It's not a very clear picture, but he has the hat. He's carrying the briefcase. You know it's him. So when she goes to Walter's lab, you'll see one of the Observers walking in front of the building there. Anyway, the next clip, Walter and Astrid investigating this giant slug creature.
Spirited, isn't it?
Well, have you considered, I don't know, killing it?
You can always kill it, son. You can't always bring it back.
You probably could.
That is true.
Do you know what I could go for?
Don't say food.
Cheesesteak. Oh,
how can he even think about eating?
I know, it's disgusting, right? And yet...
You want one, too.
Extra provolone, please.
Like father, like son.
Oh, come on, don't say that.
My theory is correct. I knew it. This organism was developed from the same material that Olivia stole from her captors. We must let her know.
You sure?
My boy, I'm not even sure that we all exist on the same plane of consciousness, but yes, I believe so.
So that is one mystery solved for the most part. I mean, he understands what the vials of stuff were and knows that they're tied to this organism and somehow, so therefore it's got to be tied to Olivia's abduction. Now, the next scene I have is of Broyles and Dick, and they're having this exchange, and I love this because it's like it's a clash of wills. I mean, they're friends, but I think it, Broyles is seeing through Dick and realizing that he is a dick. And so, therefore, you know, they're going to have a clash of wills here. And I like this exchange. I'm going to have two clips put together here, so kind of bear with me. I there's not really much explanation to give for the second clip, so I'll just play them together. Okay? Great.
I've been briefed on how you brought in Olivia Dunham.
Oh, I had reason to suspect she might be dangerous.
I agreed to let you question her, not treat her like a rabid dog. What you did was unacceptable. Dunham's been nothing but an exemplary agent, and this is my office.
Well, then you need to be corrected on two counts. The jury's out on Dunham. I'm not convinced she's the superstar you claim she is.
How could you be? You're on a vendetta against her.
Secondly, while I'm here on active investigation, this division is under my purview.
Active investigation? This morning it was a review.
Well, the Pentagon is concerned, Philip. Well, think of how this office was thrown together. Flight 627 lands and suddenly you're in charge of two dozen agents.
Somehow I think none of that's the reason you're here.
This isn't a witch hunt. I'm not here to punish some JV agent who tried to ruin my life for chasing a little tail. I'm here to do my job. Why don't you do the same?
He's just such a dick.
Can I come in?
I hate that. Knocking and asking why you're coming in.
Dr. Kimberg, the professor who died at Boston College, was offered a job at the CDC to co-chair a classified task force whose sole responsibility was to respond to epidemics.
And?
He wasn't the only scientist asked. There was another one, Dr. Russell Simon from Cambridge. I'm trying to locate him now.
What? You think he's a target too?
I do. And I also think that the people who killed Kimberg are the same people who took me.
And how'd you make that leap?
Walter. He thinks the thing that killed Dr. Kinberg is genetically similar to some evidence that I grabbed from the people who abducted me.
But why abduct you? What's the link? Why kill Kinberg like that?
I don't know yet, but so far I figured, why kill an epidemiologist unless you're looking to start an epidemic?
Get rid of the firefighter before you start a fire. Then why am I just now hearing of this?
Because your friend, Sanford Harris, forbade me from investigating my own abduction.
Harris. He's put everything on hold. Has requested that I run all operations past him before we move.
Is that even possible?
Apparently.
Sir, I'm asking you to save a man's life. Are you telling me that you don't have the authority to let me do my job?
Find Simon. Get him in protective custody now.
Thank you.
I'll handle Harris.
I know you will.
So the amount of frustration in this entire episode, you know, over the fact that nobody is able to do what they're supposed to do. They're trying to do their jobs, and because Harris is here, it's making it very hard on everybody, not just Olivia, but Broyles as well. And I like when she says, you know, you don't have the authority to let me do my job. It wasn't an accusation. It's really like, are you telling me that we're pretty much screwed here? I can't do what I'm supposed to do. And I just like that. The relationship that they build in the first season between Broyles and Olivia, I really like it. I like the fact that we don't see it. We may not see it every episode, but over time, you know, Broyles is kind of on the flip side of things now, right? Before he did not like her, and now he's seeing that she is a trustworthy person, and she does, you know, she's an honorable person and does her job well. And, you know, he sees that. And so he doesn't have a problem standing behind her. Now, the next clip I have is of Olivia leaving the office to go try to get this other doctor. And during this, when she's walking out, Mitch is there, you know, who Mitch Loeb is the guy that actually abducted her, but she doesn't know that. And they have this exchange.
Hey, Mitch.
Hey. Listen, Olivia, your abduction. I'm going to coordinate the investigation. I assume everything you remember is already in your debrief.
Yeah.
If I find anything, I'll let you know. We'll find him.
That's great, Mitch. Thank you.
Okay, now I'm going to play the next clip, and I'll have a little to say about it after I play it. But to set up the clip, they've taken this professor into protective custody for the most part. I mean, they have him in a room. They're talking to him, having a conversation, trying to figure out what the connection is connecting everybody together. And that's when Harris comes in and takes, and talks to Dunham. And this is the exchange that they have.
Understand that you have requested placing Dr. Simon in protective custody.
I believe that his life may be in danger.
Yeah, well, that's taxpayer dollars, Ms. Dunham, and I haven't approved that.
Let me ask you a question. Not that I don't enjoy having you here, but how long are you planning on sticking around?
Until I have made a full assessment of how this office conducts its business. Did Broyles approve your request?
No, he did not. Mr. Harris, you don't like me, you don't respect me, and you think I'm bad at my job. But please, don't let that get in the way of doing the right thing. That man in there may likely die if we don't keep him safe. I'm not asking you to like me. I'm asking you to do the right thing.
Then we'll keep him safe.
Thank you.
Now, it hurts my soul a little bit here to say this because I spent the entire episode hating Dick. But, you know, what happens is during this exchange, you can see Harris thinking it over, right? And he realizes that maybe she's right. Maybe, you know, he needs to pause and think about the victim here or the person that could be the victim and take care of these people. And I like the look on his face of contemplation and a little bit of confusion about where he's going to stand on this. You know, is he going to tell her no just to spite her, or is he going to do the job that he's supposed to do? And, you know, ultimately they keep him in protective custody. Now, the next clip I have is of Peter calling Olivia and giving her whatever information they have found so far. In the meantime, somebody gives the professor, doctor, I'm not sure he's a professor or doctor. It's not important. He's going to die in about 20 seconds. They give him a glass of water. And then we have the scene of the slug coming out of his mouth. And I have all the audio of that because it just sounds so cool.
This is Dunham.
Walter's still trying to determine what that thing is that came out of Kimberg, but I think we made a breakthrough.
Okay, so what is it?
It seems to be activated by a liquid.
What does? A parasite?
The yellow powdery stuff in the vials that you stole, they're like eggs, but the catalyst is stomach acid.
So the victim just needs to ingest it.
Exactly right, and then it grows. Fast.
Thank you. No problem.
And is there any way to trace it, where it came from?
Walter doesn't seem to think so, no.
Dr. Simon, with your permission, I'd like to take you to our field office. We'll debrief you, go over your options, then we'll move you to a safe house. You okay? Yeah. There'll be agents there on call 24 hours a day. Sure you? This is Agent Francis. Any medical attention, room 6? Call medical assistance.
And the sound of gunfire you hear would be Charlie shooting the slug thing. And it's also the sound of him kind of being drugged into the fringe division in a roundabout way, right? Not that he's actually part of the whole group there, but he just saw something that is a crazy thing to see for the first time on the job, right? And You know, I like the way that, you know, this is a good scene for him too, to see what a good agent and a procedure and how quick thinking he is when something does happen. And, you know, we don't get enough of Charlie Francis, and I really enjoy his character, and I enjoy what he's done on this show. You know, I he's just, for what he does, and we're going to see more of him, just plays perfectly. Now, the next clip is Walter giving us more information on exactly I think he's finally figured out exactly what this is, what the slug is. You know, he figured out, you know, how it came to be, but now he's figured out exactly what it is.
It's viral. Nasopharyngitis, albeit a gigantuan specimen.
What does that mean?
This organism is a single specimen of a virus for the common cold.
So you're saying that this is one single cell?
It's not unprecedented. The ostrich egg is a single cell, and it can grow up to 5 pounds.
They supersize the common cold, which, as it turns out, is disgusting.
Obviously, somebody's playing with us.
Yeah, they're showing off. Killing epidemiologists with the common cold.
It is impressive.
What I want to know is what they wanted from you.
Well, who cares about me? I want to know who's next.
I care about you. If we can figure out why they needed you, then maybe we can figure out who's next.
Well, I'm going to keep looking for someone who's connected to Kinberg and Simon.
I love that scene because Olivia just doesn't take it in stride that Peter just shouts out, "I care about you." He, you know, she pauses. And like I said, this is kind of an organic relationship, and it's not a romantic thing. It's a trust thing. The fact that, I mean, that's how I'm looking at this. And maybe I'm overthinking it or whatever, but what I'm getting from this is you can't have any sort of romance in this situation unless you have trust first. And then both of them have a little bit of trust issues, right? They, like I said, last episode, you know, Peter with his father and with, you know, the people he has had in his life, and Olivia with her partner, you know, John Scott, and the fact that, you know, he ended up betraying her. And, well, I don't know if he actually betrayed her, but she feels betrayed by him. But whatever, they have trust issues, and I like the fact that she doesn't just take it in stride. There's a long pause, a long awkward pause there, and I really enjoyed that. And, again, building the foundations here. I mean, you know, we're 11 episodes in. We're about halfway through the first season, and we're still building the foundations, and they've done a very good job up till this point. You know, whether you like the episode-by-episode story that's going on, or not, the point is that we're building up to something bigger here. More things are connected, and I really like the way things are going. Now, the next clip, I have to have a little bit of setup here. Olivia and Mitchell are having a conversation. He's looking at her eight ball. He throws it to her. She drops it, and she notices his shoes.
I need to talk to you. Charlie, I think I know who killed Simon, and I think it's the same person who abducted me.
Who?
Mitchell Loeb. Don't ask me how I know, I'll tell you later.
Livy, that can't be right.
It is, and I can prove it. But I've got Harris watching me like a prison guard. I can't do this myself.
What do you need?
I think at this point in the day, Charlie is thinking, man, I need to stay away from these people because they are nuts. Okay, first we have a guy that's in a room by himself, and he starts puking up the giant worm things, and Charlie has to shoot it, and that's just bizarre in itself. And then he finds out that one of his coworkers, an agent that he trusts, is dirty and kidnapped one of his other coworkers. And now, in the next scene, he has to approach Peter and try to do something that's a little underhanded.
What's up?
Olivia may have a lead on who abducted her. Only she can't pursue it without some help. I can't help her.
Why not?
Suffice it to say that sometimes the problem with being in law enforcement is that you gotta obey the law yourself.
And you think I'm the guy to break the law for you?
I'm sorry. I didn't...
No, look, you're right. I am the guy to break the law for you. What do we need?
I need a wiretap.
On who?
Mitchell Loeb. FBI.
Oh, Charlie, Charlie, Charlie. Your day is going to get a little bit worse. Anyway, Olivia's day is actually getting a little bit better. And I think she's passed the bad karma on to Charlie or something here. But anyway, Again, this is one of my favorite episodes. I can't hammer that home enough. There's just so much action in this episode. It's just crazy. So in the meantime, you know, Olivia goes and shows up at Mitchell Loeb's house. She's going to break in when suddenly his wife appears. Oops. And she starts talking about her abduction and just BS's her way in, and they decide to have a cup of tea. In the meantime, Charlie and Peter are trying to get the phone tap working, right? Peter's talking to one of his friends at the phone company. He's telling him to do certain things. Nothing's happening. And finally, he gets it to work right as the wife calls Mitchell at work. And that's where the next audio clip comes from.
This is Mitchell.
Olivia Dunham is in our house.
Why?
She claims she was here to check on you.
Is it working?
No. Hey, Kyle, it's not working. All I'm getting is buzz. I don't hear anything.
I think she knows.
I don't know how she could.
I don't know what to do.
Well, I do. And you have to move fast. You need to kill her. Right now.
Okay, I got that a little bit wrong. They're not quite tapped in yet, but they're going to be. That's what we hear, but Peter hasn't heard that yet. And the next clip is where he hears them discussing terminating Agent Dunham's life.
We can say she came after you, that it was self-defense.
There has to be another way to do this.
No, there isn't, honey. There's one way. You cannot let Dunham leave there alive. In the entry closet, top shelf, in the back, there's a gun. Contact me when it's done. What is it?
Olivia's in trouble.
What happened?
Oh, hold on a sec.
So with that, Peter calls Olivia and says, she's going to kill you. You got to get out of the house. So she goes to leave, and Loeb's wife says, Agent Dunham, and then they have a really kick-ass fight. I'm not sure how Dunham is still walking around because she takes a metal candlestick to the head. And it ends up where they both scrambling for guns at the same time. They both fire at about the same time. Dunham hits her right in the forehead. And the scene ends with her looking over, and the coffee table she was sitting next to, about 6 inches to her left, there's a bullet hole or a mark where the bullet hit. And, you know, she has a big sigh of relief that, you know, she didn't die. And it was this episode just has so much action. We have action. Action. I cannot speak today. Action. Headphones to the eye. I'm still going to go with that. Anyway, so, you know, we have the beginning scene where it's action. We have this great big fight scene here that's pretty great. I mean, I just loved it. It was just so good. And the intensity of the entire episode, not just the action part or the fact that people might die, but the whole deal with having to deal with Dick, you know, is just not, it just makes you, I don't know, it just makes you stressed out while you're watching the whole thing. But anyway, so they have everything that they were able to gather, and they bring it in and are looking over it, and that's where the next clip comes in.
There's nothing here. Loeb knew he was going to cut and run.
Based on what you found, you have nothing to trace.
No, nothing yet.
I'll need more time to trace the origin of the virus. But even then, it would be impossible to know the exact origin.
Liv, I hate to even ask you this. Anything you remember from when they had you?
No. There's nothing that I heard. Like, nothing that I remember.
There's no other way to track Loeb's cell phone. Tech Services tried everything.
Wait a minute. Not everything. The agents at Loeb's house, they're surveilling the area, right? No sign of Loeb?
Not yet.
So he doesn't know about his wife?
No, he doesn't.
Meaning that she could still contact him.
I'm ahead of you. I'll get a team.
Well, what happened? I missed it.
Okay, we need Samantha Loeb's cell phone. I think inventory has it.
Come on, man.
Nice work.
Thanks.
Peter, once again, proving himself of value to on as far as regular investigation is concerned, and he's done this a couple times. And again, I think it lends to building trust between Olivia and himself. Now, the next clip is of them kind of waiting. Peter sends a text, and or somebody sends a text on her phone to Mitchell Loeb, and they tell him to go someplace, and they're all sitting there in a car waiting. Olivia, Peter, and Walter. And, you know, of course, the whole plan hinges on whether or not the two of them text. But I love the exchange of Walter that Walter has here. I love the fact. I'm just going to play the clip and shut up about that.
rather tense, isn't it?
He's gonna come. Assuming, of course, they text each other.
Do you see him yet?
No, not yet.
Peter was really worried about you when you were gone.
Walter.
You were.
Well, of course I was worried.
He was really worried.
Loeb does show up, and they're able to take him into custody. There's a great scene where she's, you know, Olivia confronts him after they make him put his gun down, and he's just being smug, and she goes ahead and just hits him. And I love the scene, and you know, it's something you knew was going to happen, but it needed to happen because of everything that he's put her through. Not only the abduction, but having his wife try to kill her. And again, this comes back to what's the whole point? What was the point of this if they weren't going to kill her? He's going to be willing to kill her now. Let me play this next clip. This is after he's into custody and they're having this conversation. During the conversation, there are pictures of his wife that she has in a file folder, and she opens up and puts in front of him. Now, the whole time that she's doing this questioning, her and Charlie are in the room, and Dick is overseeing them through, you know, watching through the glass to see what's going on. He has his doubts that she's going to be able to do her job and make him confess to anything.
Don't be an idiot, Loeb. This is your one chance to cooperate. I'd say to you that you have no idea how hard we're going to come down on you, except you do.
I want to see my wife.
You're not getting a thing until you talk.
Then you're out of luck.
Why'd you kill them? Kinberg and Simon. And why like that? I mean, there are easier ways to take somebody out.
You're getting nothing.
She can't do it. She won't get a confession.
I'd say the evidence in this house is plenty.
No, I'd say evidence is no confession.
Ask as many questions as you want.
Why take me? And that Spinal Tap, what did you want? Loeb, this is your last chance to cooperate.
Or what? You'll torture me.
Can you leave me alone with him?
What's she doing?
You want your wife, Mitch?
Yeah, Olivia, I do.
Okay.
Understand the rules? What we're up against? Who the two sides are? Tell me at least you know that.
Who's we?
We had a plan here, lady. We had a shot. And you just blew it.
And why did you kidnap me?
Kidnap you? Idiot. We saved you.
Saved me from what?
We were going to let you go. We saved you. You have no idea what you've done. Not a clue.
There's your confession.
And Olivia does get the confession, and Peter enjoys pointing it out to Dick that she did, in fact, do it. Now, here's where my problems with the episode come in, as far as he says that they saved her and they were going to let her go. Well, if that is the fact, why were they letting the two guys in the room without masks that she would be able to identify later on? Obviously, he's not willing to let her in on any kind of game plan that they had, as far as trying to get her to join their team or their faction or whatever their cause. So, you know, what what was the point of that? I mean, how was she never going to see these guys again? I mean, she's a trained FBI agent. She's going to remember what they look like, right? And I'm sure that, you know, I'm wondering if when they're asking about the abduction or whatever, and the warehouse was clearer, they never go and say, well, did you, she's like, you know, well, I didn't really see anything. Well, she saw this guy that gave her water. Why didn't she describe that? Why didn't we see more of that? And I'm wondering if, because maybe that's a plot hole and that's, they didn't want to highlight that by saying, yes, here's what this guy looked like. Also, Loeb said, you know, told his wife, hey, go ahead and kill her. You know, she's a pain in the ass, kill her. She's in the way, whatever. We can't be found out. Well, if they went to all this trouble to abduct her and inject her and save her, then why, you know, why was he willing to, after all that effort, why was he willing to kill her? I don't understand. There's questions. What did, you know, why is Loeb telling the truth? You know, why did they target the two people that were going to work for the CDC? What was the, you know, why, what did they inject into her? You know, I mean, what was the point of that injection? There's a lot of questions here, but I mean, the episode, I love it. Like I said, this is easily in my top 10 favorite episodes of Fringe for a lot of different reasons, but there are a lot of questions too. And the questions are part of the reason I like it as well, because are we going to find out the answers? What's going on? You know, I love all this stuff that's going on here, and watching Fringe is not like watching Lost. You're going to get answers to what's going on. And, you know, that is something that, you know, as you watch the episodes and you've seen that you've gotten answers in the past, that it's all building up to something and you're hoping that the payoff is going to be worth it. But it's not just stringing you along with question after question and you're not getting a payoff. So I'm okay with the questions. You know, I enjoy them. And I you know, I don't know if we're going to find out the point of everything. Personally, I think that the whole idea behind, supersizing the cold virus, I think that the whole point of that was just because that they could, and it was a way to take these guys out. But it doesn't explain why they wanted to take these guys out. Are they going to release some sort of virus? Did the guys have information on something? You know, and hopefully we'll find out those answers. Now I have a final clip here, and it's of Broyles tells Olivia she did a good job. Go home and get some rest. And, you know, she looks kind of confused and a little worked up, you know, and she's thinking. And Peter and her have this exchange. And, of course, Walter has to add his 2 cents.
You should get home.
What did he mean he saved me? What the hell was that?
He was messing with you.
I don't know. I mean, did you see him? There was something about the way he said that.
The man's insane, Olivia.
I concur, and in the category of takes one to know one. That man did seem disturbed.
Then why take me?
Because they wanted to hurt you. They knew that you were investigating them. They wanted to take you out.
Then why not just kill me?
You're talking about a man who infects people with giant viruses. If you hadn't escaped, who knows what they would have done to you. Listen to me. You just told him that you killed his wife. He said that to you to try to get a reaction out of you. To get to you. Let it go. You got his confession. Go home.
I was worried, too, when you were taken.
Thank you, Walter.
Not as much as him, of course.
Walter.
It's true.
And, of course, Walter is seeing something that is slowly developing between the two that we're all seeing as well, and whether they want to admit it or not. Is happening. Obviously, they have feelings for one another. And like I said, it's an organic relationship, and I enjoyed the fact that the way that every relationship in this show has been fairly organic, you know, the way we've slowly watched it develop and watched the way things, all the pieces fall into place as far as the interactions and inner workings of the different characters on the show. Now, the episode ends with Olivia and her niece sleeping together, and I really enjoyed that. You know, I thought that was a good ending, and I think it kind of bookmarks this particular episode. You know, what ends up being important to her in the end, and the peace of mind she finds in family for the most part. And like I said, you know, we're going to see that family fade over time, but for right now, it really does work for this particular episode. Now, the name of the episode again was Bound. It is episode 11 of season 1, and next week's episode is going to be, I do not know, next week's episode will be episode 12, obviously. I'm trying to vamp why I look at my notes here. Next week's episode will be The No-Brainer. And it's not my favorite episode by a long shot, but it's still, it's okay. But, you know, it's kind of a real downer after Bound, which is, you know, like I said, in my top 10. Anyway, thoughts, opinions, you know, ideas, I send them my way, scifidig@gmail.com. You can send an email, you can send an MP3 file, you can do whatever you want to do. You can call the comment line as well. I do have to say that my game plan here is I'm trying to pull audio when I can, and then when I get enough audio for two or three episodes, sit down and record the breakdowns for the episodes. So I end up being, if I'm crossing my fingers, I'm going to jinx myself by saying this, but I end up being, so right now I'm about three episodes ahead as far as dropping them into the podcast are concerned. So if you're sending me an email, if you can please make as much reference to what I said as possible, because it all blends. Keep in mind that by the time you're hearing it, it might have been in the can for 3 weeks, and I'm so far ahead in the episode. That's why I don't watch the episode so far ahead, because they start to jumble together, because it's all one continuing story. So trying to pick each episode out, as far as the comments you make, it's kind of difficult at times, and I can't really respond to them unless I know exactly what you're talking about. So if you could do that an extra little bit of work for me, please do that. Anyway, the episode was Bound. I'll talk to everybody next time. So I've read a couple of comics this past week that I wanted to talk about. And like I said, you know, I know that there's not a lot of the percentage of comic readers in this, in for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast, at least from what I garner from talking to some of the people, is not really high. And so I don't want you guys to miss out on some of the best science fiction that I have partaken of in the last year or so. So I want to tell you about Saga. Go look it up on Amazon. Saga, and it is, I'm just going to give you a very brief, because I don't want to spoil anything. First of all, the art, absolutely out of this world, loving it so much, just fantastic. But what we have here is we have a very well done meshing of science fiction and fantasy. Basically, you have a planet and a moon for that planet. One, the, you know, the planet, I can't keep track of who's on who, but I think on the planet it is winged folk who have a lot of technology, and on the moon, it's more of they're kind of like they look like mythological creatures. They have horns and things like that, and they use swords that have powers and things like that. And they, for whatever reason, they started a fight, and the battle got so bad they realized that they couldn't really destroy one another, because if you destroy the moon, well, then the planet's going to be in trouble, and if you destroy the planet, then the moon's going to be in trouble. So they have taken their quarrel all over the universe, and they're fighting and fighting and fighting. The comic is centered around one of each race, and they have a baby. And that is the very first thing you see. By about the fourth or fifth page, they have this child, and they're being hunted, and we're not sure why. Now, you know, we've seen this story a lot of times, but not this well done. So we're going to find out over time a little bit about their past, a little bit about their future, and the introduction of all the different aliens is fantastic. I love the aliens. I love what they do with them. They have the robots who are kind of in charge of things, and they have human bodies, but they have television sets for heads, look like television sets, that are kind of blank unless they get angry, upset, and then it flashes an image. And, you know, that is how they kind of display their emotion. And, you have, there's an alien who's a bounty hunter who doesn't have any arms. She's got like six or eight eyes. Doesn't wear a shirt, you know, bare breasted, and you don't realize it because she's wearing like this dress, but underneath the dress is all her spider legs. And she has all kind of cool weapons. You know, she's got everything you need, you know, laser gun, shotgun, cleaver, hammer. She's got it all. And let me just say that, you know, from a science fiction standpoint, it's got everything that you want. It's got action. It's got adventure. There's rocket ships. There's space. There's crazy aliens. It's really well done. I've been hearing about it now for several months, and I've been kind of not doing anything about it. And then I said, heck with it, I'm going to go. And I got them all up to issue 10. And read them all, and I cannot wait for more. I am really loving the heck out of this. This is one of those books, if they bring out a hardbound edition, I will actually go buy a paper version of this book because I really enjoy the artwork. It's just so well done. But go and look it up, Saga. I know that the first trade is now available on Amazon. But I would be surprised if you do not love it. I would be completely shocked if you don't really dig this. Now, keep in mind, there is some nudity. It's nothing super graphic, I don't think. But there is some nudity in it, not necessarily for kids. But at this point, not like, you know, there's some cursing and things like that, but not like over-the-top adult. It's not like you're reading Crossed or something like that. I mean, it's, you know, what you would see, and, you know, some of this is probably a PG-13 R-rated movie kind of stuff, kind of mixed up. But I'm absolutely loving it. Just a fantastic science fiction story, and I'm in for the long haul. I'm really enjoying this. The other comic I want to tell you about is a digital, well, they have a paper version now, but it's digital only. Digital first, I should say. And it is Injustice, Gods Among Us. And there is 8 issues so far. They're 99 cents an issue through Comixology. They are, you know, they say they're 27 pages, but the reality is if you condense into regular comic, the way that they format it and panels per page, you're probably getting about 12 pages, I figure. Not that that, you know, that for 99 cents, you know, I figure, you know, I check it out. Well, what happens is I get hooked on the story. And then I couldn't stop reading it. Now, this is kind of like the story before the video game that's coming out. And I have been kind of surprised at how well some of the video game tie-in books have been, you know, how good of a story they have told. And this is, consider this like an Elseworlds story for those of you that are familiar with DC. It's a DC story with DC characters. It takes place somewhere, some other world, right? And so, you know, what you're dealing with here, I'm just going to give you a little on. Something terrible happens to Superman. I don't want to give too much away, but that something bad happens to Superman in the first issue. We see what happens. It's pretty horrendous. And ultimately what happens is he gets tired of the war and innocents being killed. So he makes a statement, which is that he's not going to put up with it anymore. He's going to police the world and make sure this doesn't happen anymore. He's going to stop wars. He's going to destroy, you know, people bombing. He's going to stop those bombs. Things of that nature. My favorite point in the whole book so far, and there's so much to love about this, these books, but my favorite part so far is when he says, I've had enough, and this is what I'm going to do, and he flies away, and Wonder Woman says, I've been waiting for you to say that since the day I met you. And I just really am digging it. I just don't want to give too much away because it's a 99-cent book. It's well worth your time to go and buy it and check it out. And I'm not sure how many issues are going to be. I haven't done that much research to figure out how long this is going to be going on. I just know that on Wednesdays it comes out. At least I think it comes out on Wednesdays. And so I have been buying it every Wednesday. As soon as it pops up in Comixology, I've been purchasing it and sitting down to read it, and it has become like a Wednesday thing for me now. And I'm going to kind of miss it when it's all over, but it's a pretty quick read, and I go back and check out the art and everything. And what I like about it is that they're not using the classic DC costumes or even the new 52 costumes for that matter. They're more of the movie costumes that we're seeing. You know, Batman looks more armored, Superman, the symbol, it is not like a piece of fabric. It's more of like a shield that sits on top of his uniform. And, you know, those are the two real standout ones. But I am really enjoying this, and I wanted to share it with you because for 99 cents, I mean, you can go check out the first issue. If you hate it, then you don't have to continue with it. But let me just say that this isn't this kind of violent. You know, I mean, Superman does kill somebody by putting his fist through his chest, and he crosses that line. And it's pretty crazy, but I'm really enjoying the heck out of it. But those are my two comics this week that I've fallen in love with. Saga, I cannot say enough positive things about it. Just everything about it. I'm loving the science fiction story. And you know me, I'm a story guy. Those of you who have been listening to the show know that you can have horrendous art, but, well, I can't say horrendous. You could have bad art. And as long as you got a good story, I'm in for the ride. That really horrendous art takes me out of it, and then I got to kind of step away. But this has the two things I love: great art and a great story, you know, which is what you need for a comic. And I'm really enjoying the heck out of it. So, and also, you know, I like letter pages. Letters pages are something that too many comics get away from. And I, you know, you have DC and Marvel, and they seem to do a lot of advertising or talking about their company in the back. And I'm not knocking that, but I'm just saying, when I pick up an independent book, you know, whether it be Image or somebody else's independent book, and there's a letters page, I really enjoy reading that and finding people like-minded like myself, or people who point out things that I might not have seen. And I just, not enough letters pages as far as I'm concerned in comics. I wish that they could big come back. And I wish when you bought the trade that they would include those in there. But I guess that's one of the reasons to pick up the issues. But anyway, those are the books I want to talk about. This has been Sci-Fi Dig Show 325. As always, I appreciate feedback, and you can do that by just going to scifidig.com and seeing the 8 million ways that you can be a part of this. I've kind of dropped the ball on the weekly Barbie. I'm going to be getting back to that, or trying to. You know, I just haven't come across anything that's been rather bizarre. I've been trying to do some macro photos for my photo a day. I kind of guess what it is kind of deal. And for those of you that follow the photo a day, I've also decided, when I decided to do the photo a day project this year, you know, last time I did it, it was a photo I took that day, and it sucked the joy right out of the project because there was too much stress. Because some days I work a 12-hour work day, and there's just not enough hours in a day to do all the things I want to do. So this time I decided that I would present you with a photo a day, and I didn't care when I took it. If I had to go through some of my back photos to do that, if I had to snap a picture with my iPhone that day, if I was doing something and took, you know, 15 pictures one day and wanted to spread it out, that's what I was going to do. So with that in mind, I've been posting a nice collection of photos, just different things. But I've decided, we'll see how well this goes over, because I posted the first one today, that I was going to start posting. Those of you that were here for the ride when, you know, the whole hospital stay thing that was, you know, kind of sucked. The first thing I did when I woke up in the ICU and they were pulling, 17 or 18 pounds of gauze out of my gut, I said, give me my phone. They're like, why? I'm like, I want to take a picture of it. Nurse thought I was crazy. By day three, the first thing she did before she did anything else is hand me my phone so I could take a picture of it. So I have a picture of this massive wound every day. For every day that they did it and I was awake, I have a photo of them treating it and doing what they had to do. And anyway, they're kind of nifty pictures, and I decided I'm going to start posting those for photo a day. So that probably going to go over like a big lead balloon, but I find the whole thing interesting. I find the fact that, you know, I had this done without stitches, and so I had a massive wound that had to be packed every single day, well, several times a day. And I am just amazed how, when you're looking at the photos, how quickly this healed. I mean, it doesn't seem quick, but when you think about it, I'm walking around doing stuff and I got a great big hole in my gut and it healed. I was amazed. And so I decided that I would post a couple of those to share those. So when I post them and I say, don't look, no, I really don't. I really mean it. If you're squeamish, don't look. I really mean it, because they're not, you know, they're kind of gross. But anyway, that's just how I roll. Anyway, I'm tired of saying it anyway. Anyway, I'm wanting to show up. I'm going to run out of server space. I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out.